Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, June 20th, 2016. An economic expert says the country's inflation rate is not a good sign.
With prices going up, the issue of affordability comes up, so the average person will have a hard time affording basic life-sustaining commodities like the food items, sugar, oil, wheat flour, and so on and so on.
And South Sudanese authorities are blaming international community for the strikes in the country.
There are some members of the international community who are now agitating here, agitating the civil society, the public servants to go on strike. This is something orchestrated in order to declare the government a failed government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's inflation rate is officially the highest in the world. In May, the country's inflation stood at 295%, according to South Sudan National Bureau of Statistics. The International Monetary Fund pointed out in a recent report that the country's financial deficit in the fiscal year 2016-2017 could reach $1.1 billion, or 34 billion South Sudanese pounds. A senior economist with the Ebony Center in Juba says this is not good news for South Sudanese. James Alich Garang says the government must act now to save the country from a looming economic collapse.
You are not able to command or to purchase what you were able to a year or so ago. So your purchasing power has really gone down almost three times. Previous year was 100, now you have come to 300. Your purchasing power is not as strong as it used to be, three times weaker.
What is the implication of this on the ordinary people in the country?
Already have seen with prices going up, the issue of affordability comes up. So the average person will have a hard time affording basic life-sustaining commodities like the food items, sugar, oil, wheat flour, and so on and so on. So this means that poverty is becoming an issue more and more and more. So people have now become more poorer than they were a year ago. And it also means it has reduced our people to a deplorable situation. Today there are so many on the street begging around Juba.
Is the government publishing its spending to the ordinary people year in, year out? Do we know how much the government spends in a year?
There are always been issues of irresponsible spending or financial responsibility among the spending agencies. So some institutions are spending more than their fair share, and some are underspending. So institutions that are supposed to build the nation, like education and health and economic sector, like agriculture and environment, these institutions are not getting anything. But the ones that are making most noise, the ones that are militant in nature, are the ones that are overspending. The interior, the law enforcement agency, the army, the presidency, and so on and so on. So when you look at every budget, the spending is always more than what was budget for. So we go beyond the budget, which means we do not observe or obey our appropriation act. And as of now, a huge budget is projected, like the recent IMF Article 4 consultation. It says that in the next fiscal year, 2016-2017, if nothing is done, the budget deficit will be in the neighborhood of about 34 billion SSP, or about $1.1 billion, or something close to 25% of the national gross domestic product. So this is how things are. This is how bad things are.
There are two institutions in South Sudan that are supposed to be the watchdog. That is the anti-corruption,
yes,
and the Auditor General's, yes, Chamber. These two institutions have not been able to function due to lack of funding. When I checked with the two institutions last time, they were saying they received almost half of the budgets that they asked the government to give them. Could there be a reason why the government is underfunding these watchdog institutions?
I don't know if there is any other ulterior motive that might be there, but what I know is that the Minister of Finance is supposed to be dishing out or dispersing each spending agency its fair share. But at the end of the year, you find that each institution would come to claim payment, and they are told there's no money. They are waiting for oil money. And when the oil money comes, then those institutions that are militant in nature will scramble and scramble. They will get their fair share, and the rest remain.
We are going towards the end of South Sudan's fiscal year, which is, June. What lessons can the government learn from last year?
The lessons that they can learn are what other countries have always learned. That when you depend so much on single source of income, you subject yourself to external shock. And that's what we are subjected to now. But beyond that, if you choose to do nothing, things will continue to go sour. We are now on a cliff. We are hitting a cliff. And we are just almost falling. But thank God, our people are very optimistic. The international community has not given up so much on us. So we are just hanging in there. So what it means is that being nothing does nothing. It harms you more.
That's James Alich Garang, a senior economist at the Juba-based Ebony Center. He also teaches at the University of Juba. University of Upper Nile. He was speaking to me from the capital earlier today. 22 judges in Wau have joined their colleagues across the country in a nationwide strike to demand good working conditions, provisions of transportation, timely payment of salaries and allowances. Representatives for the judges in Wau says the strike will continue until the government addresses the grievances of the judges all over South Sudan. As Michael Atit reports for VOA from Wau, citizens say the strike will encourage criminals to take advantage of the situation and cause disorder in the state.
The premises of the main court in Wau is empty this morning, with police officers at the gate and some seated under mango trees. Many disappointed citizens kept coming into the court building and were told within minutes by the police officers to return home because the judges are on a strike. 52-year-old Peter Deng came to the court to follow his divorce case. Deng, who displays a visibly angry face, says he is disappointed with the judge's decision to strike. Speaking in Arabic, he says he hopes the judges will call for the strike and resume work quickly so that many cases like his can be resolved.
Now I am disappointed in my case. The judiciary is the pillar of the country. If they go on strike, criminals will get increased and police will not arrest anybody because judges are on a strike. These days, rate of crimes might increase, especially in the rural areas, and it was only the court which prevent this.
48-year-old Abraham Rett Ibrahim also came to the court to follow his case over land dispute. Speaking in Arabic, he says even though his case will be delayed because of the strike, the judges have the right to go on a stage a work slow down.
I know the current situation doesn't favor anyone and exclude others. But we are all aware of the economic situation of our country. And we also know that salaries have not been paid for more than 3 months. So we have no choice unless we wait till the strike is over.
Judge Kuch John Accord works at the Court of Appeal in Greater Bahr el-Ghazal. He represents 22 judges in Wau. Speaking in Arabic, he says the current economic crisis in the country has forced judges to demand their rights.
We cannot continue working under a poor working condition. And we know that many cases will be pending. By law, we are supposed to work according to the law of the country. But how can you expect us to do so if we are not paid?
A court says payment of salaries, allowances, and provisions of transportation are among the 29 demands spelled out by the judges.
There are no papers, no fuel in the generator. And there is no transport mean to pick inmates from prison to the court. They come walking on foot, which is risky to their lives, including other citizens there. There are a lot of them. That is why we decided to strike.
Meanwhile, in Juba, the spokesperson for judges across the country says the judicial system in South Sudan was already paralyzed. Gary Raimondo says judges have coordinated the nationwide strike beginning today to let the people of South Sudan know who is responsible for the shortcomings in the delivery of judicial services.
We want to show to the people that and tell them that it is not our fault. We are lacking tools to deliver justice. And at the same time, we are also, the leadership is denying our rights.
Raimondo says the judges' strike is having an immediate impact. He says even before the judges went on a strike, the government already began negotiations with the judges to address their grievances.
We are happy with our President of the Republic, Salva Kiir Mayardit. He has assigned his advisor, presidential advisor for legal affairs, Honorable Gurbandi, Lawrence Gurbandi. He's in connection with us, in contact with us since the day before yesterday, Saturday through Sunday, yesterday, we were in a meeting.
Raimondo says the judges hope that the government will address their demands so that work can resume in the nation's courts. He says the judges' strike is open-ended. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
Nabil Biagio contributed to that report from Juba. As strikes by judges and teachers continue across the country, South Sudan's information minister accused some unidentified members of the international community for agitating conditions in South Sudan. Information Minister Michael Makuei denies workers have not been paid for several months.
As we have heard, there are some institutions, there are some public workers who are already on a strike, others are likely to follow. All these things are being done on the pretext that their salaries have not been paid. Others have been exaggerating it, saying people have not been paid for 4 months, others are for 5 months and so forth, which is not true. There is an agitation going on from certain sectors against the government of South Sudan. These sectors now are the ones which are agitated, and some are already on strike, others are on the way. Anyway, the government of South Sudan is doing its level best, and within this coming week, they will be paid, or everybody will be paid his salary, if it is a question of the salary. And thereafter, it will be clear to us as to what are the intentions. Because if it is a question of salary, the salary will be paid this coming week. If it is another thing, then it will be clear and we'll know what it is.
What do you mean if it's another thing? What is that other thing you're talking about?
Well, of course, there are some members of the international community who are now agitating here, agitating the civil society, the public servants, to go on strike. This is something orchestrated in order to declare the government a failed government. This is something to do with the policy of a regime change. This is what we know. There are certain elements within the international community that are doing this, and we know them.
Mr. Information Minister, but if the public sector workers have not been paid and they are saying the government has failed them because they put in work and they are required to be paid a certain amount of money and the money is not coming, don't you think they have a legitimate reason to say the government has failed them?
Yes, we don't deny that. The government of South Sudan has some financial or economic problems that need to be addressed. And the government is doing its level best to ensure that this situation is addressed. So there are certain elements that have entered now to agitate, using that as an excuse for achieving their objective.
Well, once you are already aware that this is the objective to have a regime change, why wouldn't the government redouble its efforts to prevent that from happening by making sure?
As I stated, we are redoubling our efforts. This is why I said we are paying the public sector next week.
Well, I hear the judges will also begin their strike possibly next week. How do you address that challenge, Mr.
The demand of the judges, that is not correct. The demand of the judges is not because of the delay of salary or not because they are not paid, but they have their own demands. They have demands of improvement of their conditions of service, on their allowances, and so forth and so forth. So their demands are completely different. They have nothing to do with what others are doing. Despite that, the government is now trying its level best to address some of the concerns of the judges are being addressed, and that is it. Among them was the question of promotions. Some of the promotions have been made.
following the meeting of Council of Ministers with President Salva Kiir, what was the directive concerning the payment of the workers?
The general directive to the Ministry of Finance and the Central Bank and the economic sector was to sit and see how best the government of South Sudan will solve this economic situation. This is the general decision. It has nothing to do with the pay.
That's South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makuye speaking with VOA's James Peter Clotty from Juba. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese officials arrest traffickers at Juba International Airport. That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best toy you played with as a child and why?
I used to play with the toy of a car. You know, the design is a toy of car. This is the most I used to play. And the reason was that I love to drive. I love to drive that car. When I was dreaming that when I grow up, I will be having my own car.
I used to play with organ, music organ. I like singing. I like music also.
The best toy that I played with while I was a child was a doll. I could find it more interesting since I had no friends. So I would play with it as friends and talk to it.
We collected that clay soil. We make our own toy car. And then I used to make a good toy car where we call them Jeep when we see the army vehicles.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Wildlife officials in Juba say they have seized more than a ton of elephant tusks destined for Asia. A spokesperson for the National Wildlife Service says police have detained two suspected traffickers arrested at Juba Airport last week. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Kampala.
South Sudanese officials banned tons of ivory earlier this month on World Environment Day to discourage poaching in the country. The National Wildlife Service officials say the country is experiencing unprecedented poaching in wildlife. South Sudan's National Wildlife Service spokesperson says wildlife officers seized 1.2 tons of ivory packed in boxes labeled as food. Brigadier General Kamis Dieng Ding says the ivory was shipped into South Sudan from Uganda's Entebbe International Airport.
We seized the ivory, we brought it here. The accused are arrested now. We open a police case. It is now under investigation by the police. And the ivory is now in the Ministry of Wildlife Conservation and Tourism in our stores. And we are making inventory to register it, to put the South Sudan code and to measure it.
Dieng says wildlife officers arrested two suspected traffickers. He says the traffickers have strong links to criminals and South Sudan's law enforcement officers are working to arrest their collaborators operating in Juba.
It is a network and we cannot determine it now. But there are people in Entebbe, of course, and some people are here. Those who are arrested here, one is South Sudanese, the other one is from Uganda. So now there are two arrested now.
The Wildlife Conservation Society office in Juba says since March, it documented a sharp rise in illegal ivory trafficking and logging in many parts of South Sudan. The group says some South Sudanese military officers are working with international partners to trade in the country's natural resources. Deputy Director for the Wildlife Conservation Society office in South Sudan, Michael Lopedia, says South Sudan is witnessing a sharp increase in the illegal exploitation and trafficking of the country's wildlife products.
The wildlife forces and the crime unit should really keep on monitoring and checking all those cargo, because this is something that will not stop in a short time. And it's good that they're using the skills and the knowledge that they acquired from their recent training. So yes, they should be vigilant. And it's also good to have some networks with neighboring countries so that people monitor together.
Dieng says South Sudanese police and wildlife officers are working with neighboring countries and airline companies to help end the practice of trafficking of illegal wildlife products from South Sudan.
We'll try to communicate with Uganda. In this case, it's the source of the ivory. And also we'll try to communicate with the Ethiopian Airlines the carrier which shipped the ivory to South Sudan, and it was ready for shipment to Malaysia through the Egyptian airline. So we'll also contact the management authority of Egypt. We'll tell them, let them know about this. And we as well communicate with the World Customs Organization so they can be informed. We'll also copy all these things to Interpol, main office in Paris.
Lopidia says wildlife officers and conservationists must work hard to end illegal trafficking of ivory tusks and other wildlife items.
People should not just lie down and say, okay, it will be the last season. All the responsible organized forces, the responsible citizens of South Sudan, they should be vigilant and report any other activity that they think does not follow the law.
Lopidia says a growing demand for ivory products in Asian countries such as China and Thailand encourages poachers to kill elephants and other endangered species across Africa. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Kampala.
Students from University of Juba and Catholic University engaged in a lively debate in the capital over the weekend to talk about issues to do with peace in the country. Organizers say it's one way of encouraging young people to understand the affairs of their nation. Reporter Mungume Debs Rakarinj reports from Juba.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the stage is Ms. Jacqueline, who has come here to propose a motion by saying peace is everyone's responsibility.
Students from the University of Juba say peace is the responsibility of every citizen, while their colleagues from Catholic University argue that a mother, father and child cannot have peace if the leaders of the country are not at peace. Before the debate, there was a pre-voting exercise in which 408 participants voted in favor of the motion, but the opposing side received more support after the debate. In the end, 328 participants voted in favor of the statement that peace is everyone's responsibility. 137 voted against it.
I still want to refute on what my sister said, saying that you is a leader. You is a plural. Grammatically, it's plural.
John Agwek is a first-year student at the University of Juba's Community Studies Department. He says he learned a lot by attending the debate.
I came to learn that it's really everybody's responsibility to initiate peace in this country. Because when we came together and we brainstorm on what to do, we will really find a solution to what we are doing.
But 19-year-old Aban Ayul, who studies commercial science at Catholic University, says she was not convinced by the arguments put forward by her University of Juba colleagues.
Is peace everyone's responsibility? I say immediately, no, it is not everyone's responsibility. Because with leaders, if father and a mother, they are not in peace, their children cannot be in peace. So our elders in the country, if they are not in peace, citizens cannot be in peace.
Hiro Saito is the head of outreach unit of the United Nations mission in South Sudan. He says such debates help young people acquire knowledge about issues affecting their country.
As they said, they are the future. You know, they really are going to make a difference in this country, and I hope they will be the leaders of this country in the future after they graduate.
Despite their opposing views, students from both sides later hugged, danced at the conclusion of the debate. 18-year-old Simon James Mike, a student at Spiri Secondary School, says he learned from the debate that people can peacefully coexist despite different views.
I get the message, the strong message for peace and reconciliation, how to build myself and how to control myself. I will take it as a message to my people who are in the areas, who are in the villages. I'm going to tell them, let us share everything together. Let us love ourselves. Yes, as one people, one country, as one people, one nation. With the peace, we can grow. With the peace, we can love ourselves in school, in every community also.
Saturday's debate, the first of its kind here in Juba, was organized by United Nations Mission in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
As the world marks the World Refugee Day, South Sudan's Commissioner for Refugee Affairs says the Commission lacks resources it needs to handle the large influx of refugees into the country. Commission officials say insecurity in former Western Equatorial State has led to the closure of a camp hosting thousands of refugees from Central African Republic and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Juba.
Hundreds of UN agencies, government officials, citizens and refugees from countries bordering South Sudan gathered at the Freedom Hall to mark World Refugee Day in Juba. This year's theme is We Stand Together with Refugees. The colorful occasion was graced by a local South Sudanese musician, WJ, who was once a refugee. Dancers from the Nuba, the Nubian and Azande communities performed traditional dances. 26-year-old Andrew Bashir is a refugee from the Nuba Mountains. He says he has been living in a Jontok refugee camp in the former Upper Nile for 3 years after fleeing the fighting in the Nuba Mountains. Bashir says he is grateful to the UNHCR and the South Sudanese people for hosting him. But he has a message for the government.
They should work in partners with the UNHCR, those organizations who are working for refugees, in order to improve refugee life. So in all sectors, for example, in educational sectors, also in the settlement, at least they should also increase some services for the refugees. So, and also my message to the government of Sudan, so they should grant peace for people in order to settle.
21-year-old Ankas Musa, another refugee from the Nuba Mountain, says she's continuing with her education at the refugee camp. Musa says she considers herself lucky to be in school, but says the government of South Sudan should do more to help refugees.
We need a good security, we need good schools, we need support.
27-year-old Emmanuel Tembe is a Congolese refugee from the Lasso refugee settlement in Yei River State. Tembe fled Congo in 2009 from the LRA attacks. He says the Congolese refugees in Lasso settlement are living in harmony with the host community. But he longs to return to his home in the DR Congo.
I did not even deserve to live as a refugee. And it comes under circumstance that today I'm to be called a refugee. And my message to the government of Democratic Republic of Congo, it is that they have to work hard so that there is peace in DRC. We are ready to go back into our country.
The Commissioner for Refugees Affairs, Bol John Accord, says despite its own problems, South Sudan has opened its doors to refugees and asylum seekers. But he says the Commission is faced with a number of challenges in addressing refugees' affairs.
Lack of resources to manage the refugees' operation in the field. Two, self-settlement of refugees in areas close to borders with Sudan. Three, insecurity in some areas where the camp had to close down, like in Izo.
He thanked UNHCR for keeping refugees and IDPs in their hearts and urged that commitment to continue. The UNHCR representative in South Sudan, Ahmed Wassam, says there has been a huge influx of refugees across the world in 2016 compared to the last few years. Wassam is calling on the transitional government of national unity to create a conducive environment for the South Sudanese refugees to return home. South Sudan has nearly 3,000 refugees, mainly from the Blue Nile states, Southern Kordofan, Central African Republic, DR Congo, and Eritrea. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. I am John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us, and we hope you tune in again on the same station tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Amesha zaliwa, wala la la, 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 la 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 la